Guys, I've got a great episode for you today. I'll be chatting with three first-year master's students from California State University, Dominguez Hills. With us, we have Alex Villanueva, Christina Villaseñor, and Regina Cernicola. These guys have some great insight and absolutely fascinating stories as to how they found occupational therapy. We'll discuss things like applying to OT school and what life is really like for them as an OT student. They all have so much passion and excitement for the profession, as well as provide some great tips for anyone looking to start an OT program. I can't wait to share this episode with you. If you're interested in occupational therapy, this is the place for you. This show aims to explore our profession by sharing who we are and what we do. Because for us, occupational therapy is more than just a job. Hi, I'm Sarah. Welcome to OT for Life. Welcome, guys. It is such an honor to have you join me today.
Thanks.
Yeah,
we're happy to be here.
So to begin, I'd love to hear each of you give the 30-second Cliff Note version of your life and how you discovered OT. So we'll start with Alex.
Okay. OT is a second career for me. I was originally in advertising for about 5 years, and that sucked my soul out and spit it out multiple times. So I needed something a little bit more refreshing in my life. So I didn't pursue OT yet. I actually moved to Southeast Asia, and I was working for TripAdvisor there, and I discovered OT through Google over there, and I moved straight back and then started my prereqs.
All right. And let's see. Can you tell me, what's your favorite ice cream flavor, Alex?
Rainbow sherbet.
Sherbet.
All right. Okay. And Christina, can you give us your story?
All right. So I'm also second career, actually. And it's a kind of similar story to Alex's, but I got my undergrad degree in business administration and worked in transportation. And while I did love it for the first like year and a half, it really became really taxing on me. And, you know, while I loved working with my clients because I was able to develop that relationship with them, it was very limited by, you know, like by business transactions. So it was all based on cost. And I realized I needed to have relationships with people on a much more meaningful level. And I really wanted to truly help them personally as opposed to just their company. So then I looked into nursing and then I thought, oh, that's not for me. But then my dad actually mentioned something about OT at Santa Ana College. And then I looked at it and I was like, wow, this is a perfect combination of things that I'm good at, that I'm interested in, and that I think I can rock at eventually. So here
I love it. That's great. And what, Christina, what is your favorite flower?
White roses.
Ooh.
I don't know if that's very cliche, though, because it's a rose still, but I love
them. You didn't say red roses.
And Regina, tell us your story.
So I'm also a second career. My story is kind of similar, kind of different. I grew up with a mom who is still an OT and also actually started her master's program when she was about my age now, which is kind of weird. She went to San Jose State and she always was trying to get me to do OT growing up. So, you know, I'd follow her at the hospital and do like the career day stuff, but I didn't have a full need or what they could do because I was just like, I don't look, you know, hospitals. I don't want to work in healthcare. And I thought I wanted to do journalism and I had like other ideas for myself. So after I got my BA in communication, I also went into advertising, advertising sales. And I barely hit my monthly quota, but I was making friends with all my customers. I was kind of at that time thinking like, okay, what can I do as a career? And so I left that and went to a nonprofit where I loved the altruistic spirit of it, but I also realized I didn't like the businessy side of it. And I started going and taking classes at the community college and just sort of feeling it out, thinking maybe I needed to give OT a second look. And I just kind of realized that I didn't have a full understanding of it and really loved what I was learning. And my mom's very happy.
I bet. So is she, you said hospital, is she like inpatient acute or... Yeah. Okay, so that was kind of your main exposure into OT to begin with.
Yeah, but what I really loved when I was doing my shadowing was actually outpatient neuro is kind of what I was fascinated by. So it was good to get that variety of studying.
Yeah, I think it is fascinating that all three of you guys really kind of stumbled upon OT as a second career. And as I was listening to you guys briefly highlight your lives, there's so much more that I'm sure has happened. But it's interesting because I kind of pulled out some words that you were talking about, jobs that were kind of not fulfilling, you are looking for more meaningful and finding the perfect match. And I actually, when I was a student, I was told that the OT profession is kind of the profession of misfits because we all come from very different backgrounds. Some of us go straight through undergrad, you know, right into graduate school. They always know they're going to be an OT. And then there's other people that don't know, or maybe it takes them a little bit longer. But there's also people that are interested in dance and interested in pottery, or they're interested in history or business, you know, and they're all coming from different walks of life. So I think that's pretty interesting to how you guys all really found the field of occupational therapy.
Yeah.
And, I didn't give you your question. What's your favorite band, Regina?
Oh my gosh, that's so hard. I mean, I like all types of music. I've only seen one band twice in my life. Okay. Like, I like them enough to want to see them more than once, and that was the Lumineers.
Oh.
They're like bluegrass kind of folk music, and I never was into that growing up, but I really like them.
I like it. So I actually wanted to bring up for all of our listeners right now, what is actually happening on, I guess I should say, what I am looking at currently. Can you guys describe your current location?
Well, as a matter of fact, we are in the library at school in a conference room under the table. Why?
We are in the prone position. Apparently our room echoes really badly, so we decided to climb under the table.
Yes, I think it's probably still a little bit echoey, but now everybody understands that OTs are very flexible, and they are literally laying on the floor doing this interview for you guys. So hopefully everyone appreciates that.
Well, we appreciate it. It feels like an adult fort.
And like, all I can see is this weird pipe. I don't know. What would you call that? It looks
electric cord or
dangerous.
Just dangerous. All right, Dad. On my end, that's literally like chops off your heads, which is pretty funny. It just shows that you guys are adaptable, and I love it. So let's jump in to some of our questions here. And I want to talk about the application process. What was good about it? What was maybe something that was unexpectedly hard?
The GRE. I was not prepared for that whatsoever.
Capital letters. Yeah. G-R-E.
I don't know. So I think it depends by the school, but they have OTCAS, which is like a online application system. And me personally, it was my own living hell of having to send applications out through them, and then they send it to my school or vice versa. I don't even know how it works, but I had them on speed dial and I talked to them probably every day.
Yeah, we're sharing our own painful stories about the application process. And I think the GRE was kind of rough for all of us, you know, especially second careers. We'd all been out of school for some time, but a lot of this stuff wasn't top of mind and things we kind of needed to refresh. I know with me, if I could go back and give myself advice, I would have just told myself to give myself a lot more time to get everything done, because I didn't anticipate how much I needed to study for the GRE. And then if you don't pass it the first time, you have to wait, I think, like 21 days or something before you can begin. In the meantime, you need to be doing your shadowing, but sometimes it can take up to a month just to get your health clearance for wherever you're going. Mm-hmm. And so I think people just really underestimate how much time they need to give themselves to prepare to even apply. And, you know, when these schools have hard deadlines, you're freaking out if you wait to the last minute for everything. I mean, I think I had actually quit my job the first time I applied just to focus on applications, because I just felt like it was so much stuff that I just needed to dedicate myself to not worrying about anything else.
Wow. I think that's great advice, because I think everyone thinks, so I can just do this at night or on the side or anything. But when it comes down to having hours and getting all of the other stuff that you have to get done, like the health clearance, like, yeah, that definitely takes time.
And letters of recommendation.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Because you always want to make sure that you give, if it's an old supervisor or maybe a professor or something, you want to give them enough time so they can really invest in what you need and make sure that they can get it done as well.
Right. And then also kind of piggybacking off of what Regina said about the hours, I think a lot of people really kind of underestimate how hard it is to find placement just for volunteering. So I was fortunate enough to be able to find a placement in a pediatric clinic, but the OT and I became very close, and she kept mentioning how there were people that were emailing her just 1 month before they had to submit 80 hours, and they're like, okay, I am yeah. And she was like, that's not going to happen. And, you know, it was really unfortunate for them, because that just means believe that that's going to delay their application process. So, you know, I think it is good to be as prepared as you can for having a list of different places that you want to call. So to even see if they have spots open, because it takes a long time. And, you know, we definitely recommend going to at least two sites so that you can have a more well-rounded perspective of the field entails.
Yeah. Well, and I actually, I interviewed one of my volunteers last week, and she was mentioning that one of the hospitals that she wanted to volunteer at, they require that the volunteer has to be there for a year placement.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I even for that if you don't know.
Like, right?
Okay, I have my job and my friends.
Yeah. I mean, I think she said it was only like 4 hours a week or whatever, but they literally wanted you there for an entire year. And I was like, oh, that's the first that I heard about that.
Well, the hard stuff about that too, we were saying this also, is that, you know, you're only able to shadow because of all the legal things. So if you have to be there for a year, that probably just gets old really quick because you're so limited in what you can actually do and see.
Right.
I don't think I would want to do that. I think I would rather look for a different location.
Well, I mean, unless there's a lot of opportunity, like, not to discredit that place. Like, I totally understand what you're saying, but like, maybe they could do inpatient and they could do outpatient, and maybe they had a hand clinic, and maybe they had satellite facilities that a volunteer could go to. So I feel like as long as there were ample opportunities, it could be good. But yeah, I definitely agree that a year is a long time, and that would be just at one place. So pros and cons both ways.
Yeah, we're in LA County, so there's going to be a lot of stuff around, I think.
That's a great point, because I can only imagine in other cities, you know, other towns, there might not be as many OT opportunities. Anything else about the application process? I know you guys talked about the GRE, you talked about volunteering. I'm going to go back to what Alex was talking about. I say we, me, and the people that were applying around the time that I was in school, which has almost been a decade, which is crazy. But we didn't actually have the OT cast, so that's new. I don't know when that actually started, but I was kind of learning it as my students are talking about it and the volunteers and everything. I'm like, what is that? You know, like, I think it's supposed to make it easier for everybody.
Right. It does really help because you're able to upload everything onto one full system and then send out applications that way. So it's definitely easier in that sense that everything's kind of consolidated. But there are some things where if you're not really asking the right questions or even looking around enough, you might miss. Like, personally, for me, I had a rough time with it too because, you know, I got my undergraduate degree in business administration, and, you know, being honest here, I wasn't the best student at the time. You know, just life, work, everything kind of affected my GPA. So I didn't have the most competitive GPA, but my prerequisite GPA was, you know, really great. But what happened was, once you got all the transcripts into the system, they didn't really do a good job of letting you know beforehand that they don't take into account any repeat courses. And so it actually makes your GPA lower than what was on your official transcript.
Huh.
So that is definitely something that I would like to warn people about. I did not know that. Had I known that, I would have definitely taken more classes before to kind of help upgrade it up a little bit more. Yep, that's my warning.
The general surgeon's warning.
Seriously. For me, it was, OTCAS helped streamline a lot of stuff, but each school still requires things so differently from one another. Mm-hmm. You know, one school might want so many hours, one school might want letters of recommendation and, you know, forms filled out by whoever you shadowed. And for me, that was extra difficult because you're trying to stay on top of five different applications. And if you're shadowing, for example, I had to bring like 20 different forms. Okay, can you do this for this school? Okay, now can you do this for this school? You know, and making copies of everything, because if I didn't in, I didn't want to go back to these people a year later and be like, hey, I never made a copy of that letter of recommendation you wrote me. Can you do it again? So it's like you have to be extra diligent and just, yeah. I think there's a better way at the OT school system, all kind of meeting in the middle somewhere with certain things. But you didn't have to have 20 different resumes.
Right. Do you feel like, and this can go for all of you, but kind of based on, Regina, what you just said, do you feel like that you guys were ever put in a weird situation where you had to ask your volunteer supervisor to do a lot of extra work and you already knew that they were completely slammed with their own jobs and you almost felt bad?
I felt like I was giving them extra work and I felt bad. I think San Jose required them to fill out kind of like an evaluation on me in addition to just writing a letter of recommendation. Mm-hmm. And that was like scoring me on the scale of 1 to 5 and all these different attributes and things. And, you know, I gave him, I think, over a week to do it, but it just seemed just kind of unnecessary. I did feel guilty asking them to do all this extra stuff for me.
That's true. Loma Linda had something very similar to that, where they had to fill out a different kind of a scorecard for you, mm-hmm. and on top of a personal recommendation that they had to answer actually specific, I think, prompted questions on top of that. So just, I can see it's a lot more in addition to just a recommendation letter.
Yeah.
I think I'm looking at it from the lens of being a practitioner and managing all of my roles that I have in general. And then on top of that, I really vowed for my volunteers and I vowed for my students. And it's I want them to do well and I want to invest time into what they need. But having to fill out 20 papers or whatever, it's just one more thing that you have to add in. And so that's why that question or that comment, I should say, just kind of stuck out to me, because I was I sense it on my end, and I can only imagine, the other practitioners that are out there right now.
I think the hard thing too is maybe you get somebody who is really busy, or maybe someone isn't comfortable really writing very eloquent letters. So, I had a couple of people who wrote me really nice things, and other ones were really brief and short. Mm. I was like, okay, is that because I wasn't a good student? But how would that translate? You're right, in school, are they going to read it and go, well, this person I'm comparing Regina to had these really long, great letters from their person they're shadowing, and Regina's good, but he's very brief and to the point. Maybe that's overanalyzing, but I think you're right. You're forced to kind of have to just make it quick and succinct to the best of your ability. 5+ students or more in a year.
I think that would be a pretty interesting question for maybe some faculties that are on the review board of applications and all of that. Of what are they actually looking for incoming students, and what stands out and what doesn't? I feel like when I was applying to OT school, there weren't as many people that were looking into being OTs as there are today, so now you guys really have to stand out kind of above the crowd. And what does get looked at more often than others?
Right, because I do think that a lot of programs say that, we try to take a holistic approach when looking at the applications, but the truth of the matter is they do tend to focus on some things mm-hmm. over others. And so it would definitely be nice to have a better idea of what they're looking for.
Yeah. To jump on back to another part of the application process where they've made you create your own YouTube video and upload it to YouTube of certain, I think it's 6 or 7 questions that they wanted you to answer in your own way. And you have to record yourself and upload it. And I thought it gave me a little bit more of a personal element to it that I think just really show who you are. And a different way of evaluating you in a way, I guess.
I think that's awesome. I think that's different. But I also feel like if you are somebody that maybe is like me, that I'm not great in front of a video, or maybe, you're not as confident putting yourself out there, you might be really a really awesome person, but it might not actually be shown. So I don't know. I can see it. I value it. I think that's actually really cool. And I actually hadn't heard that yet, but I can also see where some really good people might not come across as really awesome, stellar people because they're unsure. And I speak for myself on that one. So
I'm also unstellar.
Let's get into the transition period from being a worker bee in another profession to then going back to school, potentially for some prereqs. I'm guessing most of you guys had to do that, to then applying and then starting school. What has that transition for you guys been like?
A long journey.
I think, it's got rough, especially around our first midterms, but I think what our program did really well, they emphasized just how they're going to ease us into graduate school. So I think the first maybe 3 or 4 weeks, things weren't as bad. We had homework and reading and, different assignments, but it didn't amp up too quickly. And I appreciated that a lot.
Yeah. I think if you've been doing prereqs and you've been doing all of that leading up to this, you're already kind of in the zone of getting used to studying and late nights and all of that versus just coming in cold turkey, after not being in school for years. Mm-hmm. So that lot. And there was a good several years after I graduated undergrad where I was like, heck no, I can't even imagine going back to school. I am not in that mode. But you kind of reach a point where you either are and you're ready to go back or you're just not. And I think the other great thing here about our program too is they really emphasize collaboration. So it's like, hey, you're in the program. There's no need to be competitive anymore and try to set yourself apart in that sort of way. Now use this time, this opportunity to work together. And there's been so many times where, somebody would write notes for a chapter we had read, and somebody else did a study guide, and somebody else did this, and it's just made, I think, all of our lives so much easier, and it's brought us together in a way as well, so that's helped a lot.
I would honestly say that looking back on it, the hardest transition was probably just even deciding to make that jump from being in our old career to this new one. Because I know, personally for me, I experienced analysis paralysis. I was just like, wow, I'm going to have no job. Like, I don't even know if I'll get in. So, you know, that was honestly the scariest part for me. Yeah. But then once I made that jump, I went full force. I just, you know, the same day I decided I wanted to change my career, I drove to a community college, met with a counselor, and I was like, what do I need? And she told me, you need intro to psych. And I was like, darn it, I thought I took comedy. But anyway, I happened to find a class that actually started that same evening. And I went that same day to the class, and I just never looked back. And I just, you know, I did all my prereqs, and it did actually take me a while. It took me about 3 years because, you know, mind you, I had a business degree, so I could basically start fresh. But even then, I was enjoying myself so much more than I was in my business classes. So it was a good sign for me. I think all those prerequisites, it's really kind of prepared me. And also, I didn't really get into a school the first time I applied. So yeah, once I found out I got accepted, I was like, this is great. I'm ready for this. I'm a little anxious, of course, just because it's something new. And, you know, you can't always anticipate how everything's going to be, but I was ready for it. And I think the program has done a really good job of transitioning us, like Regina and Alex said.
Can you guys mention how long you were in your first profession?
I was in the transportation industry for a little bit over 3 years after I graduated. I didn't get that job right away. It did take me a few months after I graduated.
Okay. And then you had like a year of prereqs or a year or two?
It was actually ended up being three. I was still working when I first took some prereqs, but then after a while when it started getting really hectic and I knew for sure it's not what I wanted to do anymore. I was like, what am I doing here? I need to dedicate myself completely to what I'm trying to do now as an occupational therapist.
And what about you, Alex?
Yeah, I was in advertising for close to 5 years.
Okay.
In like different areas. But yeah, then just transition out of it. Mm-hmm. That was for me.
Yeah. I graduated in 2011, and then I started taking my first prereq, I think, 2015. And then, obviously, same like Christina, I applied to San Jose State the first time, didn't get in. I would have started in 2017 if I got in. So it was about 3 years of prereqs as well.
So what it sounds like, 3 to 5 years is definitely a good chunk of time, but it's also not that long for you guys to start a career or a profession and then realize, this is not for me. This is not the direction that I want to go in.
Maybe you guys can speak to this too. I think what struck me the most was that I was working jobs and they weren't careers. Mm-hmm. And it was this idea of like, okay, I could quit and go somewhere else, but it's just going to be another job. And right. I lived in Northern California, so I was really in the heart of like Silicon Valley, and nobody feels like they're secure there. Everybody's either moving to jobs or getting fired or their company goes under so often that I hated that feeling of not feeling secure. And I was still living with my parents, but I couldn't get myself to move out because I was like, I'm terrified. I'm not going to be able to pay rent because I'm going to quit or I'm going to get fired or something's going to happen. And so it was this feeling of like, I don't feel like I can move on with my life until I know a track that I'm going to be on. That was the biggest thing for me.
When do you guys think you had that aha moment of I need to get out of my old job?
For me, like I said, I initially enjoyed my job, but after a while, you know, I worked in a very lucrative industry, so it was very emotionally and physically taxing. We had to reply to emails within 5 minutes or less. The phone call was going off. People were yelling across the office, like, I need this done. We need to do this. And granted, I love a fast-paced environment. It keeps me on my toes, and I like that. But after a while, it just got to be too much. I was working a minimum of 10 hours a day. Sometimes I'd go with no breaks almost. Jeez. And after a while, it started affecting me in such a negative way where I wasn't really sure of who I was becoming anymore. The only thing I knew is I didn't like the person I was becoming. I was no longer chipper. I love music. And at that point, I didn't want to listen to music at all. I wanted no noise. I wanted no human interaction. And I was like, wow, it's gone to this point. And that's when I realized, like, I am not happy and I have to do something about this. But then after I kind of went through that phase, that's when I started thinking, I know I'm not happy, but I do know that I've learned something about myself through this job. What is it? And it was the fact that I really enjoyed working with people. And that was my favorite thing, was working with my clients and helping them. And I'm like, how can I do that better? How can I do that more? And that's what led me to OT.
So you totally just stole my question, and I love it that you jumped in like that. But I was going to ask, no, don't apologize. Like, I'm like, yeah, oh, she's answering it. If you guys could pinpoint one thing that, and Christina, you don't have to answer this anymore, but name one thing, pinpoint one thing that your old life, your old job taught you that you will be utilizing or using as an OT.
I think working in account management and advertising, you're trying to work with a client to have some sort of like end goal that you could agree on. And I think with OTs, a lot of collaboration, you are trying to find what's, you know, in their best interest, but it's a lot of trying to see things on their level and work forward with that.
I think for me, I mean, you obviously learn a lot about yourself in this process, like what you do and what you don't like doing. I think for me, I quit my first job cold turkey because I was crying at work one day and I realized, why am I crying at work? This is so stupid. You know, I'm not old enough or like stressed enough to be doing that. And so I quit cold turkey and I'd had another job offer it was also in sales, but a smaller company. And the job offer was like amazing. It was like $85,000 or something. And I was just like, no, I'm good. I had nothing else set up. I took an unpaid internship for 6 months at this amazing nonprofit and I was totally happy. And I realized I'm not motivated by money. And for me, it was all about going somewhere where I felt like I was, you know, proud of what I was doing and I could look back and actually feel like I accomplished something. And then when I went back into advertising a few months later, that's also what I realized was this, like, these clients were spending millions of dollars on things that nobody was going to care about. And I didn't want to look back in 30 years and be like, well, I ran some good ads for Yahoo, which isn't even around anymore. You know,
like MySpace, okay.
And, you know, I have coworkers that were proud of themselves for doing that. And that's fine. But I just, again, it wasn't me. And I knew it was a matter of like making money. What does that leave me with? So
right. Well, I totally date myself if I say Napster. Okay, good. Whew. Not the oldest one here, right?
No.
Besides taking selfies and laying under the table, talking to an OT, what does a typical day or week, you guys can pick which one, but what does a typical day look like? Or what does a typical week look like?
My days are very unique in our program because in our section, we have 21 amazing women and Alex. So I am constantly outnumbered every second of the day. So a lot of like gossip. We talk about celebrities. But no, I mean, we are, like I think Regina mentioned earlier, it's a very collaborative environment. Like we're always working together. We're always studying after class together. You know, we have class, honestly, not too daunting how long classes are. We do have 7 classes, and that's a little bit overwhelming at times. But everyone is so good about coming together and providing notes or whatnot. And, you know, our days are basically reading notes that people put online.
Do the girls give you like makeup tips or, you know, do they comment on how you dress or anything like that?
We tried to help them with this Bumble profile.
No, and we tell him that after this program, he's going to know all of women's secrets.
They get really excited about pesto.
A pesto, homemade pesto, or is there a brand?
Our teacher was going on about it. All the girls were getting all jittery and excited.
Well, because we were going to engage in the occupant gardening, and so we planned plants, and she said, oh, we're going to plant some pesto, and everyone went, ooh, and she said, her daddy, and everyone was like, oh, but obviously not those guys.
Hashtag pesto.
But we do give Alex our food, so that's
yeah.
Oh, well then he's set. He's like, you guys can gossip all you want. I got food, I'm happy.
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, they did a great job ramping this up. We don't have class on Mondays, and we got pretty lucky our section with our class schedule. Our earliest class in the week is like 10:15. None of them have class.
Yeah, like, I'm jealous. Like, milk that as long as you can.
Yeah, I mean, knock on wood. It's probably not going to be like that. Or
yeah, it's
going to
change, unfortunately.
But great. Then you can study in the morning, and it gives us time. You know, people exercise or they commute from far away. And then we're here for, you know, sometimes, some days we only have one class a day, and then we'll head home. But we're doing presentations now, so that's changed our schedules a little. Lots more group work, but it's very manageable, which is nice.
I was just going to say, I think since we are a commuter campus, you know, it seemed like it might have been a little bit difficult to get to know each other just because we do go to class And then everyone has to take off because, you know, track in Southern California is a thing, obviously. But yeah, it's definitely become to the point where even though we've had so many projects and presentations, we've definitely stuck around after, and we do a lot of studying usually in groups so that we can run ideas by each other and kind of see if we're processing the information and things like that. And we've just kind of become adjusted in that way. So it works out because we get to study and we miss the peak traffic times.
Well, being somebody that commutes almost every single hour, because I do home-based therapy, I totally understand when you talk about traffic and LA traffic. So you're speaking my language on that one. But it sounds like, from what I gather from what you guys are saying, it's challenging, but it's not too overbearing. You know, it might have its moments, and I'm not saying that. But for the most part, you are given the time to collaborate, work as a team, hopefully be able to engage in some of your occupations outside of school. I know that that can be kind of few and far between when you're a student and as a practitioner, too. But it sounds like there's a decent blend, at least from what you guys are saying.
Yeah, I don't think we study as much on the weekends as we probably should. But, you know, we still get it done when we need to. And I know a lot of people that still work, or one girl in our class has two kids. They're both under student role. So it's very manageable. And I think a good thing about grad school is you're getting students who are used to working hard and are really smart and just dedicated people in general. So you have a good group of people that are very similar minded.
I always was in such awe of people that had jobs in school and had kids and families in school, because for me, it was just me, and I still struggled. And so I was always like, how does everybody do this? But again, you know, it works, and you do what you can.
Exactly.
Yeah, we definitely admire that friend of ours in our section. She is a role model for sure. Yeah, super mom, super woman.
Right. Have you guys gone through as a class of maybe percentage wise, who's interested in pediatrics, who's interested in hospital, working in a skilled nursing facility, anything like that?
I would say the bulk of our, I don't know about the whole cohort, but as far as our particular section is concerned, I'd say the bulk of them are interested in pediatrics, just because that's what most people have been exposed to.
I think that's probably, plus your experience, but I think that's probably normal for people to think they want to work with kids. But, you know, we've heard a lot from our professors and other students like, hey, you know, don't think you know exactly what you want to do, because you'll very well change your mind, or you just haven't had that exposure. So keep an open mind to things. And people have told us on countless times, I want to do this. And then I went into this. But we haven't outright kind of solidified what we're particularly interested in yet, probably for that exact reason.
Right. Yeah. The question was more just what people are thinking at this moment. You know, there's still a lot of time left for you guys within the program. So I'm sure it will change. So can you guys tell me, what excites you most about the profession of occupational therapy? Bam, I'm just throwing it out there.
I think it's kind of two things for me. Again, having the mom who's an OT, and, you know, I've always heard her talk about having to advocate for the profession and constantly working with people who don't even bother to get OT involved with a patient, or, you know, just don't have a real appreciation for it. I think just becoming an advocate, another voice to add to the profession, to really expand just knowledge about what we do and really just see how it gets to grow in the next few decades while we're involved. So that excites me, because how many professions can say that they really still have a way to go in terms of just being recognized? And so I think it's cool that we get to be part of that. I was just going to say that's my first thing. And second thing, too, I think I'm...
Okay, wait, hold on. I'm going to cut you off, because that's too good not to comment on. So hold that thought. I love what you just said, advocate. And I didn't really go into this before we got on the call together, but advocating for our profession is one of the main reasons that I started this podcast in general. I myself listen to a lot of podcasts, and there aren't that many occupational therapy podcasts out there. I listen to a lot of physical therapy podcasts, and they're brilliant. And I'm like, why don't we have this? And so the fact that you brought in the word advocate, an advocate for our profession, yes, I totally agree. And the more voices that we can get and the more presence that we can bring to our profession and really what we bring to the table as a profession, I think is huge.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's our school in particular, but they do a really good job of putting an emphasis on that here. And we have the OTAC president as one of our professors, Heather Kitching. She's also my faculty advisor, and she's pretty, you know, very involved here. And so she's obviously a huge voice and is always talking to us about that, as well as other people. So I feel like Dominguez Hills really does that well, and maybe other schools do too, or maybe there's just, it's just the time right now where OT's realizing they need to get us who are fresh to the profession, really get us early, you know, right. So that when you graduate, we are already members and we are involved in all of this versus trying to go back and get the older generation to be involved. So that's been really cool to see that in action and kind of get that education from the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, and you guys, what, you're in month four?
Yeah.
Since you started? Yeah. So like really from the beginning too. So important. We definitely need more people advocating for our profession and highlighting who we are, what we do. And unfortunately, and I hate to say this, but kind of keeping it real, a lot of times OT is overlooked. And I've had recent experiences within the last couple months where people within the healthcare profession do not know what an occupational therapist is. And I've had to explain it when we're talking doctors, physicians. This happened in January and I was just like, wait, like you should know, you know, like why don't more people know what OT is? So like kudos to your school for really kind of instilling that in you guys. That's big.
Well, I'm just excited about the profession in general because I think it's so amazing that we're using what brings purpose to people's lives as an intervention. Like what other profession can say that really? Like there's really not many that I can think of or that even come to mind. Like, so yeah, just because of that simple fact, I want everyone to know about it. I'm so amped up and I just keep talking to people about OT and I'm pretty sure I've annoyed some by now, but it's okay because I don't care. Like as long as they start learning about it and then they tell other people about it. But, you know, I'm really excited to just eventually be able to practice and be able to help people in that way with something that brings so much meaning and purpose to their lives. You know, even if it is smaller things like brushing your teeth because everybody needs to be able to function and have a good life and have good well-being. So, you know, I'm excited to practice and I'm excited to teach people about a profession and just, I'm mostly excited to work with all my colleagues, right? Because they're all like-minded people and they really care. You know, we went through an interesting journey just to get here, right? We found out what we liked and what we didn't like. And we found out we really wanted to do something that makes a difference. So I'm just really amped up about one day being able to work with a group of people that want to make a difference.
I think it's really exciting to enable people to live their best lives. And I feel, although we're not there yet, I think that the profession and just what they're training us to do, it can make such a giant impact in everyone's life, just like Ravina and Christina said. And I'm also just really excited about just like assistive technology and just the ways changing and just really incorporating itself into like everything, like people all over the world.
Yeah. So I know a little bit of information on Alex. Would you just share, you said assistive technology. I know there's something that you're super passionate about. Would you just mention to our audience what that is?
I'm a big 3D printing nerd. Everyone in my class knows, and they probably hate it every time I bring it up.
No.
This is so cool. Like this fun side story that where I totally embarrassed myself from the class. So we had a project where we had to basically reenact a disability for a day. So mine was brachydactyly, and I didn't have a functional hand. So throughout the 24 hours I didn't have a functional left hand. What I thought I would do for the project to kind of spice it up a little bit was I 3D printed a prosthetic hand, and it didn't come out exactly how I wanted to. Like it looked fine, but demonstrating it working during class was just a giant, giant disaster. Trying to like pick up a ball and pick up a cup, and like I kept putting stuff all over the room. And it was kind of like one of those bad,
like TV.
Like a dog, and like drop the curtain on.
Get the hook out. Okay.
Aside from that, I'm just super excited. Like I'm not going to determine it all whatsoever, but this, I think again, just technology just moving so fast, and I think I'm just excited at the possibilities of how we can incorporate it into our profession.
Yeah, as you were telling that story, I think that really just kind of shed some light of you put yourself in the practitioner's shoes, and then you're like, you know how this device or whatever it is, like this is how it's supposed to work, right? But then all of a sudden you have your patient, your client, or even yourself trying to test it out, and it doesn't go how you want it to go. And I think we learn from things that don't go right. And so I think that probably really kind of highlighted like, oh crap, like I gotta really maybe plan this out a little bit better, or I'm just gonna roll with it. This is not what I want to have happen, but this is life. And
we're going to move on, you know, and learn from that. So I think that was probably a pretty valuable learning experience.
My classmates never let me forget.
And also, I would love if you could send me a picture of that hand or a video if anybody Snapchat during that time.
Someone did, actually. Yeah, I can send you.
I'm pretty sure. Document everything.
That's the other great thing about being in adult roles is, like, I never take photos on my own. I always have photos of me everywhere. And I don't mind it.
I would really like to include that and link to that in our show notes so people can look at it if they want to see what this said 3D printed hand was.
I'll send it to you.
So reflecting now on kind of everything that we've talked about, everything that you guys have experienced, what would be one piece of advice that you would have for somebody that's either about to start the application process or maybe is about to start an OT program? And I'm going to butt in again, but this question actually came from one of my volunteers right now. So
I think, and I hate to draw from this perspective again, but as a man in a male-dominated profession, we need more men. Don't let the fact of, like, there's, I think, like 80-85% of OTs are women. You don't let that hold you back. You know, it's a great profession with a great trajectory, and I think more men should be part of it. So. Mm-hmm. Join.
We are all shaking your head with you at this. And of course, our listeners can't see that, but all of the women here, we are completely shaking our heads. Yes, we definitely need more men. I think that they bring a really valuable aspect to the profession where, at least up until this point, it's been highly dominant by women. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, maybe in the next decade or so, we can change that.
Well, I would say that, you know, even if you do come from a different academic background or you've been doing something for so long, don't ever feel like you're not going to be somehow adequate enough or well prepared enough for this field because you didn't do something in allied health or directly in health. You know, everyone who, even if they come from a different background, they bring a unique perspective to the profession and, you know, your academic career, but it just makes it even more exciting, and it actually helps the profession itself because we bring so much to the table. You know, and just going off of what we were talking about earlier, the application process can seem really daunting and everything, but don't give up. Do not give up. If it is something that you feel in your heart and with your mind that this is something that you can do really well in and something that you can really help people with, just keep at it. Even if you don't get in the first time and it's something you really want, just keep trying. You know, always find ways, see how you can improve yourself or just market yourself better. Don't give up. Because it's worth it.
And I feel like you guys saying that as a student, saying that to a volunteer or a pre-student, but then also, like, as you were talking, I'm like, this is, I'm picturing you as a clinician. This is what you're going to be saying to your clients, to your patients. Like, this sucks, whatever that you're going through, you know, but we're going through it together. And if you want to get back to whatever occupation that it is, do it. Don't give up. And so literally, as you were saying that, I just, like, had this, like, picture a couple years from now. I'm like, ah, Christina as a clinician. Yes, it's happening. And that client is not going to give up.
Yep, I won't let them.
Right? Exactly.
I think I have, like, two practical pieces of advice and one not practical. Kind of what we covered, give yourself lots of time. Just give yourself more time than you think you need for stuff. Do your research and then ask a lot of questions. You know, just the good and the bad. That was something that I definitely did, is OTs are so happy with what they do and they love what they do so much that sometimes I think we forget to talk about the drawbacks to the profession as well. And everybody needs to know both sides of the story to really come in with a full set of tools in front of them. And I think my non-practical piece of advice would be, I think OTs maybe at some point in our lives are all made to feel that empathizing or feeling caring for others is a negative attribute sometimes, especially in the career world. And I don't think we should ever apologize for that. And mm-hmm. I think it's just part of us not realizing where we can use it best. And I think that's what we all love about the profession, is we're like, what? I can treat people with respect and enjoy people's company and get paid for it, you know, and not feel bad about being a nice person. Mm-hmm. And I know that I definitely felt like I needed to change something, that part about myself, and I was working, but I'm so glad that I don't feel like I need to anymore.
So many good nuggets right here. Gosh. Okay. Hold on. Whew, let me get my thoughts here. I love that you said ask questions. being an OT, and I mean, just people in general, like, we really need to advocate for being lifelong learners. Never stop asking questions. Whether you're applying to school, you're in school, you are a clinician out in the field with 5, 10, 50 years of practice, like, never stop asking questions, because there's always something cool, interesting, new that you can learn from anybody that's out there. So yeah, that just really stuck out to me. The other thing that I wanted to also touch on was, I don't know if this is exactly what you were saying, but like, this is kind of what was I started thinking about, you know, in helping people. And then this kind of also goes back to, Christina, what you mentioned a little bit ago, but you know, you were talking about like the act of like brushing teeth. On the forefront, that doesn't really seem like all that big of a deal, right? Everybody brushes their teeth twice a day, sometimes more, hopefully not less, but anything like that, or being able to like brush your hair, some sort of like hygiene, while on the surface it seems like a very small occupation, on a whole, it's a huge deal. And the reason that I bring this up is I do a lot of international volunteer work, and some of the cultures in some of the countries that I go into, they actually, I don't know if it's a lack of awareness, lack of education about just basic hygiene. And so there are all of these other issues that arise because of poor oral hygiene. They don't know to brush their teeth, and the negative effects that not brushing your teeth have on health. And so while kind of on the surface, and maybe even if you're like talking to peers that don't really know what OT is, and they're like, oh, you just help people brush their teeth, like, it's not just that. And I think being able to help people, regardless of how big or small that occupation is really big.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. One more question. What does OT mean to your life?
It's hard to sum it up. I think what it means to me is that I think I finally am learning how I can use my gifts for good, and how I can be an instrument of light for society and my neighborhood. You know, so I like that. It's interesting because this profession for me brings me hope in that sense, because I can use my strengths to help people. But it's also obviously brought me hope because it was a new start for me. So it means a lot to me because I can finally use things that maybe were seen as weaknesses before as strengths, and I can do good. I can do something that's measurable, that's good, and I can help people live better, happier lives. And I cannot wait to be able to actually practice and say that I have. But yeah, to me, it's just all around means hope. You know, it's brought me hope for myself, for those around me, and I think for future generations too.
That's a mic drop on that one. That's those are some tough shoes to follow.
Yeah. You're so sweet. We don't have a mic, but we have a phone.
I can do mine.
You have a mic.
Alex, you're quiet.
I'm thinking.
I think for me, kind of keep it short and sweet, it's to me, it's like a lack of doubt, you know, entering into this profession, which is really nice, because, you know, I think we have doubt in so many areas of our life, whether it's about, am I making enough money? Am I in the right relationship? Am I this and this and this? And it's, for me, it's so nice to just be at peace knowing that this career that I'm in is what I want to do and where I'm supposed to be. It's one less thing in my life that I have to worry about. And it's such a huge part of my life that I'm happy to know that it'll be a foundation that will take me through the rest of my life with other things that come and go, family, relationships, you know, whatever, that this is never going to be something that I have to worry about or go back on. And that's been huge for me.
Yeah, I think, and, you know, kind of what I've discovered over the years that I've been in OT is that occupational therapy has become my life. And yes, yeah. Like I run my own practice and all of that, so it's a huge part of it. But even outside of that, it's like so hard for me to like differentiate or compartmentalize, because literally like OT is my life. Hence, well, one of the reasons that I chose the name of the podcast, but I fully agree with what you just said there.
I think OT, it's hard to put into words, like the way we're doing it, Christina word, it's so beautiful. But I think OT is about being brave, and even our position is about showing bravery. And even, you know, as a second career, you know, we tried something, it didn't work out for us, but now we, you know, we see another ideal, another profession that feels, you know, fits our personalities and the way we see the world much clearer and better. And, you know, we hope to transmit, you know, these gifts that they're saying, and, you know, really share it with the people that we want to treat. And they themselves, they're brave as well. They're the ones that are reaching out to get help and, you know, to achieve their best sense of self. And I'm just excited for the journey that lies ahead for all of us.
Just kind of awestruck with this conversation. Like, I know that we've kind of had our jokes and we've been laughing throughout the entire thing, but just, you know, in the last couple of minutes, we've really kind of taken it down a notch and really, really gotten into the nitty gritty, even like the emotional aspect of our profession. And I absolutely love your guys' passion for this profession, and being that you are students, it's so refreshing to hear. And I hope that you guys use that passion to continue throughout the hard times of being in school, and once you start practicing it and continue to kind of follow your dreams, because this is like, it's amazing. I don't even have words for what you guys just said, but that was beautiful.
Thank you.
Well, I'd like to thank you all for taking the time to chat. I think we covered some really great information that I'm sure will be helpful for a lot of people to hear. And we definitely had a lot of fun doing it as well. So if any of our listeners want to get in contact with you, how can they reach you?
Well, you can reach us at our email addresses.
Yeah, email is a great way to reach all of us.
Perfect. And since there's three of you guys, I'll just make a link to that in the show notes. So if anybody out there is interested, just head on over to the show notes and we will have all three of our guests' email addresses listed there.
Should I link my Bumble account too?
If you send that over, I will put it in the show notes. All right. Well, thank you guys.
Thank you. This is great.
Bye. Thank you so much. It's been fun.
Hey, before you go, I just wanted to say thanks for listening to today's episode. If you want to further the discussion, go to our website, otforlife.com, and join our Facebook group. If you like us, here are three easy ways to let us know. One, share our podcast with a friend, colleague, or anyone interested in occupational therapy. Two, leave us a review on iTunes or anywhere this podcast is found. Three, subscribe to us so you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. Thanks again. We'll catch you next time, OT for Lifers.